All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, a CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969. Welcome to Veterans Radio. I think we've got a great program going today. We've got authors. We've got the subject of the book with us, joining us. So I'm really excited. The book is titled In the Shadows of Vietnam, The Gallant Life of Father Philip Salwa. And we've got their authors, Julian Ayat and Paul Carancy, with us. So stick around. This story is amazing. It's one of those stories where, for those of you that were in the service anywhere, where you getting rocketed and all this other stuff, and you say, God, if you get me out of this, I'll do whatever you want. This is a story about that. So I want you to make sure you stick around for that. We are going to be, as I say, talking with them. If you have a question, or maybe you want to ask our guest, you can do that. Just give us a call. The number is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. I've got two events that I need to promote a little bit here. Number one, coming up next week, for those of you in southeastern Michigan, and that's our Vet Fest. And the Vet Fest is on Saturday, August 3rd. And it's running, it's going to be at Washtenaw Community College. And it runs from 10 until 3. And that's the Washtenaw County Vet Fest, Saturday, August 3rd, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Washtenaw Community College. All kinds of service organizations are going to be there. The VA will be there. There'll be veteran service officers there to answer your questions about benefits, anything that you want to know, and all kinds of activities for the family. So come on out, live music, everything else. And Veterans Radio will be there. So hopefully you'll come out and join us. Again, that's Vet Fest, Saturday, August 3rd, 10 to 3. The other thing is that our annual fundraiser for Veterans Radio is coming up, and that is Radio on the River. And Radio on the River, for the third time, is going to be on Sunday, September 22nd. And that's going to run from 2 until 5 p.m. And then we're going to do a live program at 5 p.m. From our location, which is right on the Huron River. So mark your calendar. This is our annual fundraiser. Sunday, September 22nd, from 2 until 5, I believe, in what the hours are going to be. You can find out more information if you get our flyer or if it's on our website, veteransradio.org. So check it out. Before we get into the interview, I need to thank our sponsors, because we cannot ever do this program without their support. And so starting off with is Legal Help for Veterans. And Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. You can give Legal Help for Veterans a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. If you want to do business with the federal government and you are a veteran-owned business, you got to be certified so they can prove that you're actually a veteran-owned business. These are the guys that can help you out with that. For more information, go to their website. That's nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information with them, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. The Vietnam Veterans of America. Never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. For more information, go to their website, vva.org. The Irwin Presscorn American Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we really do appreciate the support that they've given us over the last 20 years. If you'd like to support Veterans Radio, please go to our website, veteransradio.org, click on the donate button, and I'll thank you in advance for your support. Now, today's program, here we go. All right. As I mentioned, the book is titled In the Shadows of Vietnam, and it's a story of Father Philip Salwa. And I'm going to bring them all on here. So we've got Father Sawak. Do I, can I call you Father Phil?
Yes.
Okay, that will work. So first of all, I want to introduce the hero of our story. Here is Father Philip Sawak. So Father Phil, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
And I've also got the other two authors of the book, and that is Julian Alyatt and Paul Carranci. I'm getting these names correct as we go along here. So Julian and Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
All right, so let's go back in time a little bit. And Father Phil, I'm going to ask you this. What happened on that day in 1970 where you had to answer to God?
Well, we were on a mission to search out an NVA bunker complex. And we were two platoons and the command control with us. And on February 28th of 1970, the day before that happened, the second platoon was my platoon. We were in the rear, and the first platoon was in the front. So we found it was kind of late in the afternoon to lay a siege, and it was triple canopy jungle. And if anybody is familiar with that, it gets very dark early in triple canopy jungle. It was maybe like 4:30, 5 o'clock. It was already getting dark. So we decided we had to go about a click, 1,000 meters in the opposite direction to find a landing, a resting area for us to camp out for the night. So we did. And the next morning, our platoon was the one designated to go out. And meanwhile, no one slept that night because it was, you know, everybody was on edge because we knew that the Vietnamese could smell us. They knew that we were there. But fortunately, nothing happened that night. The next morning, we went up, got up, and we were the ones leading out. It was our turn to lead out the company, the two platoons. So we went out there, and in single file, and then the big mistake that the company commander made was telling us to go back down the same trail so that we wouldn't waste any time blazing a new trail. And going down the same trail is a death march. So we went down and we obeyed and we went down the same trail. And I was in the fourth squad, so I was in the rear of the platoon. And we got to maybe about 15 minutes in. We were getting close. And all of a sudden, I hear all hell break loose. And we're receiving fire from all sides. And so we're looking for cover. We're trying to get behind trees. We're trying to get behind rocks or whatever we can hide behind until we can form a defensive perimeter. And we were successful in performing that task. And no one was injured at that. Well, we had injuries, but there were no KIA casualties at that point. We also discovered that the first six people of our platoon were alienated. They were separated from the rest of our platoon by a 20-yard clearance, and they were the ones carrying the platoon radio. So we had to bring the radio up for command or the first platoon to try to get a hold of them. But every time we tried to reach them, they weren't responding. So we figured they were either all dead or they had killed the radio. So we had formed a defensive perimeter at that point. We were returning fire, and it was about a half an hour, it seems, maybe less, maybe more. Never know what time it is over there. nothing was being done to try to rescue our guys. So I got very angry about this whole thing. And I said to God, I said, Lord, I'm going out there to rescue those guys. I don't care. Nobody else seems to be going. I'm going out there. If you get me back out safe and sound and without a scratch, I'll do anything you want. It was a crazy thing to do because I wasn't carrying an M16. I was carrying an M79 grenade launcher. And grenade launchers in the jungles of Vietnam are almost totally useless. In battle, you have to shoot them almost at a 45-degree angle up so they don't hit a tree in front of you to come back and ricochet on you. So one guy came up and said to me, well, if you're going to do this crazy thing, I'll go with you. And his name was Herbert Klug from Dayton, Ohio. He was a sergeant, I mean, a Spec 4 like me, and he carried an M16. So I said, okay, we'll go out there. We low crawled. We found a big boulder that we could hide behind to give us cover, and we just blasted the whole right flank with all the firepower we had. I was lobbing those grenades as fast as I could. And one by one of the one guy came back, another guy came back. I could see them running back to safety, and saw four of them run back. And we knew that there were six guys out there. So Herb said, well, it doesn't look like the other two are moving. We better make a move for ourselves to go back. We'll go out and get them later. So we low crawled back, and I got back over to my line, and I looked over my shoulder, and Herb wasn't there. So I said, what's going on? I said, he didn't come back. I looked over the berm, and he was halfway out there on his stomach. So without even thinking, I went back out there, still receiving fire, tried to drag him in, but I couldn't even move him an inch. And that was my first experience of what dead meat, dead man, dead alive or whatever.
Dead weight.
Dead weight. Yeah. I'm getting old. I'm being forgetful of my. But dead weight was all about. And so a couple of guys went out there. We helped drag him in. We turned him over after we brought him in, and he had received an around the chin and went out the top of his head. And he was dead immediately. Never knew what hit him. So they were starting to dust off people. And they asked me, asked me to go out there to try to locate the other two. I said, I'll go, but I can't go by myself. I can't carry those guys by myself. So a couple of guys came with me, three, four guys. And we went out there and found the one guy was very injured, and found out later he had an eye blown out. So he was the point man. So they brought him back, and the other man was our lieutenant, and he was killed. We carried his body back, and they all were dusted off. And at the beginning of that endeavor, we were 27 in our platoon. 20 people were two people were killed, and the rest were wounded in action, and seven of us never received a scratch. So I was one of seven people left in our second platoon. And that's about the story. And then it was pretty much all day we were there. And by the time we were finished, it was getting close to almost kind of dark again. So we had to go and find another place to camp out for the night. And that was a night that was more frightful than the other night, because I figured they were going to come back and finish us off. But fortunately, we were all of us were on guard all night. And fortunately, none of us, they didn't come back. Apparently, we got them all, and we chased them away. And the next day, we broke camp, and we went out finding another LZ, and they dropped off 12 new guys for us. We had a new lieutenant. And we weren't finished our mission. We had seven more days to go. So I immediately became a squad leader at a private first class. I was a squad leader because I was 6 months in. I was the expert at war, at jungle warfare. Talk about a joke.
Yeah. We all talked about it. We talked about that a little bit before we went on the air, you know, so we all went in early, you know, by ourselves. And then, you know, you're flying. In my case, I'm flying along with these guys who had been there for a whole 3 months. And, you know, they're the experts. And, you know, something happens to them. And then you become, you know, the head of the platoon or squad or whatever it is. And you just have to, you know, have to do what you can do. And I appreciate it. You know, the thing for my audience to know is that you received a Silver Star for this little action that you went into. And
carried the Herb Klug got this Distinguished Service Cross,
right, which is number two on the list of awards.
Right.
And I think that I was going to read the award, but you've already told us what happened there. And I think that You know, I, my audience knows, you know, that, that, you know, I was a helicopter pilot. So I was the one who just flew you guys in and brought you back out, never really appreciating what you all had to go through. And, this mutual admiration society that has come about after the war, has been very helpful. And I'm going to go into what you did after the war in just a second, but I want to bring on, I want to bring on Julian and Paul to find out, how did you guys get involved with this story? And Julian, we talked about this earlier on. This is Julian, last name is pronounced Ayotte, and he is a writer as well. He writes murder mysteries, historical novels. I'm going to give you guys a little credit here. So there's a couple of books that were titled. One is The Flowers of Heaven, Dangerous Bloodlines, A Life Before, Disappearance, Codenamed Lily. That's the historical novel about a woman in Belgium, wasn't it?
Yes, correct.
Okay, see. And then a couple of books by Paul is Scoundrels, The Hanging and Redemption of John Gordon, The Promise of Fatima, I Am the Immaculate Conception, and Darkness at Dachau. You guys are very prolific in what you've been writing about. So let's now let's go in there and say, okay, how did you find out about Father Phil?
Well, okay. I guess I'm the guy who's responsible for that. I saw an article in the Providence Journal in April of last year, not this past year, but in 2023. And it was written by a guy named Frank Lennon, who writes a column on veterans for the Providence Journal once a week. And this particular column was about Father Phil and his exploits. Now, what is ironic about it is that Father Phil was born in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. My brother was the former mayor of Woonsocket, Rhode Island. I now live in Lincoln. He lives in North Smithfield, about 15 minutes away. I never heard of him. I said, who is this guy? How come I never heard of him? Which is typical of Father Phil. He doesn't need for you to know who he is to do the work that he does. But it was a story, as he mentioned, about his heroism in the jungles of Vietnam. And then how he later, you know, accepted the call that a lot of people make a promise about in combat, but they never follow it. And he did. This touched me. And I said, I'm going to try to find his email address, which took me about 6 hours. And then I find this email address that's got there's one lock in it. And I'm saying, what the heck is this guy talking about? So I said, this is for real, because that sounds like a Vietnam name to me. And so I sent him an email and address, introduced myself, and said, I just read the article in the journal about you. And I was wondering if you'd be interested in my writing your story in the book, and I might get a historian to help me out in the form of Paul Carancy, who has written many historical books along the way. So he answered that he had often thought about writing his autobiography, but he didn't have the patience, is what he said. I don't have the patience to spend that much time sitting there writing and proofreading. And I said, well, that's what we do in our retirement years. That's what we do. We do, we write and we rewrite and we do things like that. So the long story short is he agreed. And then we decided to meet to see how we were going to do this. And that's where I got Paul involved. So we can pick it up from here.
Paul, tell me about how you got involved in this project.
Well, I was just sitting at home minding my own business, working on a different book that I was writing at the time. And Julian called and asked me if I had ever heard about Father Phil. And I said no. And he said, there's a story in the Providence Journal today. Take a look at it and give me a call back. So I did that, incredibly impressed with the story. Called Julian back, and he said, I want to write his biography. I was in contact with him. He agreed that I could do that. Would you work with me on it? Because you write biographies and history, and Julian is primarily a novelist. So it was an invitation and a story I just could not pass up. So I put the book I was working on aside, and I worked with Julian on this. The interesting thing about it was I had just finished working on a biography of a cover band out of Georgia where there are 8 band members, all alive and well. And usually I write history, and the subjects that I write about have been dead for hundreds of years. That was my first experience writing a biography about living people. And it was the most difficult thing I've ever done because the stories conflict and everybody has a different understanding of the events. So I swore when I finished it, it took over 18 months, and I said, I'll never write about another living person again. And it wasn't more than a month later that Julian called with this offer. But the story was just so good that even though Father Phil is alive and well, I couldn't pass it up. So I agreed, and we went to work on it.
Can you tell me about the first time that you met Father Phil? What was your impression?
Which one of us?
Paul, you'll go first.
Okay, yeah. It was quite interesting because Father Phil is a priest like none other that I had met in the past. And his language was a bit rough and as he tells his story, he was very animated and fascinating at the same time. But I said to him at some point along the way, you don't speak like priests that I know. You know, you swear occasionally and you throw in a rough word. And he said, well, that's because to relate to the people that he was relating to, the veterans, he needed to be one of them and he needed to speak like one of them so they would trust him. And he apparently has, he'll tell you the story about that in a little bit, but apparently was able to do that to perfection and had gained the trust of all of these veterans to the point where they would open up to him and he was able to work on their problems with them because of that. I found Father Phil to be an absolutely fascinating person, an extraordinary priest, and every story that he told us, every aspect of his life was absolutely astounding and extraordinary.
Yeah. Julian, tell me how you finally hooked up with him.
Well, I actually contacted Father Phil by email and said that I think that we should meet for breakfast. That's always an icebreaker. And we'll decide at breakfast exactly how we're going to proceed. And when we did meet at an IHOP for breakfast, we found out that he has quite an appetite and that he enjoyed the breakfast meetings more than anything. So we decided that because there were going to be so many events to discuss and the chronological order of these events was going to be complicated, and we would have to go back and look at them several times. As Father Phil has indicated, at 75 years old, sometimes the dates get a little confused or mixed up, and so we had to go back and make sure and verify all the dates. So what we did is we taped every single meeting for about an hour and a half, and the extent of the meetings was limited to about an hour and a half because that's a lot of relating of tales and history and stuff like that. And we did this, Paul, I think for about 5 or 6 times at least. And then we had all the information we needed and we started drafting one chapter at a time. I would do the initial draft and Paul would come in and he would edit it. And then we'd send it to Father Phil to look at and inevitably he'd have changes. Because it's his story, so we had the prerogative of having changes, and so we made the corrections and then moved on. And in the process, we started to realize that he knew so many people out there, so many important people, that, you know, congressmen. And I mean, he gave the opening prayer of the U.S. Congress 1 year at the invitation of Representative David Cicilline here from Rhode Island, and he did this in Washington, D.C. I mean, he spoke at the Vietnam Veterans Wall 1 year to promote his minister's organization. He said to us very clearly, he says, you know, I'm entrusted with counseling people with post-traumatic stress disorder, but who counsels the counselor? Mm-hmm. Who do we pour our souls out to? And so it was very important for him to establish a group of people like him, counselors, you know, in the ministry, who do the same kind of work he does with post-traumatic stress disorder. And so he was invited, you know, by the founder of the Vietnam Wall to speak at their November 11th Veterans Day presentation. And boy, did he jump on that opportunity, and I don't blame him. It was a captive audience. And that really was the beginning of his mission for the next 30 or 40 years. So it's an amazing story. And it, you know, there's so many stories that I wouldn't know where to begin.
I know. It's difficult for our audience. We are talking with the authors and the subject of the book titled In the Shadows of Vietnam, The Gallant Life of Father Philip Salwa. And Father Phil, and I, of course, I found this story just resonated with me. And it's not that I'm religious or anything like that, but just the explanation of post-traumatic stress and the way that you went through your own journey, you know, to come out the other side. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know that when you got back, you were kind of lost, like many of us were.
When I come back, actually, I got my job back from the insurance company I worked for before I got drafted. So they were very good. They had to take me back because it was the law. You know, if you got drafted out of an employment, you know, they had to take you back when you got out. And it was the Employers Insurance of Wausau had just opened up a branch in Los Angeles, which they only were there about 4 years. And I was working for them. And they were very patriotic people, and they were lovely, lovely. A lot of Polish background, a lot of Eastern European background. And so when I came back, they welcomed me with open arms. But when I started talking a little bit about Vietnam, they kept saying, oh, don't talk about that. That's pain. That's too painful. We don't need to hear that. We're just glad that you're here. So, okay, so I swallowed it, and I said, okay, I won't talk about it. And that was the beginning of going into my Vietnam closet, because after that, none of my friends and classmates wanted to hear about it. Nobody wanted to talk about it, and we were in an era, a generation where we were not very welcome back, and it was not a good topic to talk about anyway. To get any respect. So I just swallowed it up, and I stayed in my Vietnam closet for 13 years until it finally came out once I was in the religious order. And
how did you decide to go into the priesthood?
Well, it was not my choice. God called me.
Oh.
It was about 4 years after I got back from Vietnam. I was back at work. I was very happy, and I had my own apartment. And all of a sudden, an article in the newspaper was talking about the great shortage of priests that were happening, and the church was going to be in big trouble and all that. And I was raised a Roman Catholic. I've always been very religious, a Sunday alone Catholic, but I said, geez, I kept going back to that article. It was almost like saying God was trying to tell me something. So one day I called the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. I was living in L.A. at the time. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Los Angeles. So that's all that stuff happens out in the West Coast. I called up the Archdiocese of Los Angeles and said, I think I may have a vocation. So they have me connected with the vocation director, said, this is his number, give him a call. Called him. He said, okay, come on down, such and such a date. So I went down. And I said, I think I have a vocation to the priesthood. He said, why? He said, because I told him about the Vietnam story and all that and the promise I made. He said, well, he said, how often do you go to Mass? I said, well, every week, Father. I said, how often do you pray outside of Mass? I said, well, not very often. How often do you go to confession? Oh, geez, it's been many years since I've been to confession. I said, well, how about the rosary? I said, no, I don't say the rosary. But he said, it doesn't sound like much of a vocation to me. But if you want to go to the seminary, you know, the education won't be wasted on you, and something might change. So they got me enrolled. I passed the exam and all that. I started that following September, and I was the oldest one in my class because most of them were coming out of high school. They were coming out. They were first year right out of high school. I was already 22, 23 years old. So I was a slow learner. So in my second year of seminary, in the fall of 75, I think it was. Yeah, 75. I was saying my rosary. I was walking in the woods, and I said, geez, God, thank you for bringing me here, because I really feel a lot of peace. I really feel I belong here. And it's the first time in my life I really enjoyed studying. And so I heard this inner voice say to me, he said, well, do you remember that promise you made to me 4 years ago? I said, oh, my God, yeah. It was the first time I remembered it. He said, if you get me out of the safe and sound, I'll do anything you want. I said, they wouldn't become, I didn't say I'd become a priest. I just said, do anything you want. He said, well, this is what I want for you, he said. And then that was the end of it. That I knew that was where I was supposed to be. I never heard from him again. Not I mean, I did, but not in that bold of a book. Well, here I am many years later doing the work of Vietnam veterans, which I love. I've been a national chaplain for Vietnam Veterans of America for over 35 years.
I gotta take a break here. But when we come back, I want to talk to Father Phil and the authors again about what you have been doing since then. And I know it's been very involved in what an advocate you have been for veterans' health care, especially mental health care. And so we're going to take a break here real quick. We have been, we're talking about the book In the Shadows of Vietnam, The Gallant Life of Father Philip Sawa. And it's great story. You got to go buy it. Go buy the book. Anyway, you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Warrant Officer Frederick Ferguson led a four-ship helicopter formation into a South Vietnamese army compound under heavy fire. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
After completing a hitch on the Navy, Ferguson got his commercial pilot's license and then joined the Army to fly helicopters. 2 weeks after graduating from helicopter school, he was in Vietnam. On January 31st, 1968, Ferguson heard that a 1st Cavalry helicopter had gone down in Hue, and another had been badly shot up trying to rescue them. Ferguson and his crew agreed to go get them. While refueling, he asked 3 Huey gunships if they wanted to accompany him. They did. The GIs in the compound reported they were under heavy fire. Ferguson circled until the fire abated, then began a low-level high-speed run into the compound. He descended blindly in a dust storm from his rotors. When he touched down, he saw there was only 1 foot clearance on each side of his blades. The GIs jumped aboard and Ferguson pulled up. A mortar shell exploded under his aircraft, spinning it 180 degrees. One of the Hueys was shot down and the crew rescued. The other two were so badly shot up by the time they landed, they were no longer able to fly. Ferguson received his Medal of Honor from President Nixon on May 17, 1969. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and our guest is Father Philip Sawa. The book is In the Shadows of Vietnam, and the authors who are joining us are Julian Ayotte and Paul Carranci. And so, Father Phil, you know, you answered the call. It took you 13 years to finally get your own act together, it sounded like, from what I read. And in 1984, you became a priest. And from there, you went on your next mission. And in that next mission was to help veterans with their own problems with post-traumatic stress. How did that go?
That was a realization that I could not be the only priest or minister who served Vietnam as a soldier that could be suffering from this PTSD stuff. There must be others in the country that did the same thing. So I said, and I had just finished reading the book Out of the Night by William P. Mahady, who was an Augustinian chaplain in the army in Vietnam. And when he got out, and he worked with veterans for a while, and he wrote this book, Out of the Night. It's a spiritual journey for Vietnam veterans. I read that, and I said, oh, my God, it really clicked with me. And I wanted to, and so I called him, found up his number, and I called him. I said, you know, Bill, I said, I think there must be other people like me and you in the country who have taken the call to ministry after their experience in Vietnam, who are maybe suffering internally but have no way to talk to about their problems or their suffering. I said, I think it'd be a great idea to start a conference and to reach out to them, all denominations. So he said, I was hoping he was going to take up the idea and do it. He says, Phil, I think that's a great idea. I'm glad. I hope you're successful in doing that. So he threw it right back in my lap. So I said, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? So I ended up finding addresses and of all the different denominations, Protestant denominations, Catholic dioceses and archdioceses, and send out a cover letter to everybody introducing myself, telling them who I was and what I'd basically, I was a Vietnam combat veteran who had become a priest and was suffering from PTSD and was looking for other people who might be also in that same dish. We could get together for a conference. And that's when I went to Washington at the November 11, 1969. No, 1979. Excuse me. Or is it 1989? I don't remember. It's one of those years anyway. Jan Scruggs invited me to present my idea because he thought it was a great idea. And so he gave me 5 minutes to talk about it. And at the end of the program, some people came up with pieces of paper with names of ministers that they knew had been in Vietnam, for me to contact them and all that. And that was my head start. And then from then on, I started writing those letters and got a lot of responses. And so the following year, it was the first meeting in Washington at the Marion Retreat House. And we had 23 ministers show up for his first conference. I was really surprised. I didn't think anybody would show up. But we had 23. And two of them were priests, were chaplains over there. And one was a Protestant minister. Well, most of them were Protestant ministers. They were all Protestant ministers, besides the two priests and myself. And so we were there for a week, and we started this with everybody, one by one, took turns telling their story. And some of us, many of us took about an hour or maybe 30 minutes. And there was never a dry eye in the place. There was one person who said he was on the verge of suicide. And then when he got hold of my letter, he got a little bit of hope, decided to come over. And we're still in touch. So it was a beautiful, we met every year for 25 years. And from that, we started retreats, on weekend retreats for veteran couples. And we didn't want just the guys to come. We wanted the wives to come, because the wives are the ones that suffer the most.
Right.
The guys don't tell their wives anything. And so they feel it's their problem or it's their fault. So we don't call it post-traumatic stress disorder. One of our members, Alan Cutter, as he's in that book, referred to it as post-traumatic spiritual disorder. So that's how we referred it from then on, which is really a wounding of the soul. And that's what we started. And it's been, we've retired the group now because we've gotten too old and nobody wants to travel anymore. And there was a few, but because other organizations are doing similar things with the younger veteran. So we thought it was time for us to quit. The other thing important to me was the fact that I got very interested in going overseas and doing this study with foreign veterans of other wars in other countries. And so I was invited to go to the Republic of Georgia, to Tbilisi, for the Peaceful Caucasus Conference, which was a conference for veterans who served in the Soviet war in Afghanistan and in Vietnam before we got there. And it was, the Chechens were there, the Azerbaijanis were there, the Armenians were there. And it was a group of veterans from all those countries. And I did my program, and it was simultaneously translated to them. Mm-hmm. And they invited me to come out the following year, and I went back the following year. I was supposed to go to Bosnia in 2001 to do the same thing for their veterans. But what happened was is that 9/11 happened. And that put a kibosh on all the travel, and that kind of put a kibosh on my overseas ministry. But that's my story.
He's not done. There's a lot more to this story that, you know, and we only have, you know, another 10 minutes or so to talk about this whole thing. I'm going to have you back on. There's no doubt about that. Excuse me. In that time, I know that you were the national chaplain of the Vietnam Veterans of America for 40 years. You've been the national chaplain of the American Legion. You worked for many, many years at the VA in Boston. And in northeastern, New England for all that time period. Are you still actively involved with any of that?
I'm the department chaplain for Vietnam, for VFW in Rhode Island. I'm the department chaplain for DAV in Rhode Island. And I'm the local chaplain to all the DAVs, VFW, and VVA, which I'm still the president. I've been the president of my chapter for the last 20 years, which I can't get rid of that job because nobody wants it. And
I can relate to that. I understand that.
So there's not any organization I'm not involved in.
No, but you're really, you know, your mission is ongoing, and there are probably so many veterans out there that are still around because of what you've been able to accomplish with that mission. And I just want, personally, from the veteran community, I want to thank you so much for everything that you've done, because of people like you, people like me, were able to open up and finally get this putrid stuff that was inside of us out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then finally be able to deal with it. I wanted to ask our authors, again, the book is In the Shadows of Vietnam. You can find it anywhere, folks, Amazon, wherever you want it to go. But giving them a little lead up, I would like each one of you to tell one story that you think kind of identifies Father Phil to you. So we've got, what have we got, 10 minutes? Less than 10 minutes, about 8 minutes. Let's see. Julian, I'll start with you.
Well, I wrote in the book, in the preface, that I had been introduced to Father Phil by an article in the Providence Journal. And, you know, I said to myself, I'm disappointed in myself for not having known Father Phil until now. And that I felt it was my obligation, and I think Paul feels the same way. I have to write this story. I can't let it sit. This is something that so many people need to hear about because it's going to help them. Father Phil has helped innumerable, you know, number of people in his lifetime. And he can help more without even knowing it by people reading this book, because they'll be enlightened by what he has to say and what he did. And he's well worth knowing. Trust me. I wrote in the book, and I compared him to someone that St. John Henry Newman, a British cardinal in the 1800s, who was a theologian and a writer and a poet. And he was canonized as a saint by Pope Francis in 2019, not that long ago. And he once said that it's almost the definition of a gentleman to say that he is one who never inflicts pain. And that's Father Phil. That's what he does. Yeah. And so, you know, I could talk hours about him, but this summarizes what I think he has done in his lifetime, and he's not done. He's not done yet. There's still a lot of fight left in that guy, and so watch yourself. He's there. He doesn't think so, but there is. So he's a friend, and I'm happy to call him my friend.
Thank you. Paul, how about you?
Well, you know, awards are not just an ego boost or something that's self-serving. Awards are given because other people recognize an amazing or extraordinary contribution that you've made in the lives of other people. Father Phil has gotten so many awards in his career that Julian and I struggled with how we would list them in the book. And we finally ended up just having to have three appendices in the back of the book to list all of his awards and accomplishments. You know, we mentioned that he was a Silver Star recipient in Vietnam, but he also received several other awards from the military. He received so many awards from organizations, the Knights of Columbus Golden Lantern Award, the highest award given by that organization, and so many others. Like I say, it took three appendices to list them and explain them. So that's one of the things that I find so amazing about Father Phil. But there is another story that I can relate to in a sense, and it's not about Father Phil. It's about his parents and the amazing love story that resulted in their wedding, their marriage. Julian so eloquently wrote about at the beginning of the book. I think that just deserves a mention because it's extraordinary.
And I know that you, Father Phil, you're still living in Rhode Island, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
All of you are from Rhode Island. Guys, I know you live 15 minutes from each other.
Yeah.
Around the corner.
You know, we didn't have time to talk, but I just want to mention that one of the important parts of my life was going back to Vietnam and adopting that Vietnamese family. That'll be for another show.
I did want to ask you if you had ever gone back, because many of my friends have gone back. I don't know if I'm quite ready for that. But you adopted a Vietnamese family while you were there?
Yeah, they're living in Santa Ana, California now. In fact, the mother just died. She was 86. And the father of the group is 97 years old.
Wow.
But this is back in 1990. So yeah. They were young then, with teenage kids. And now the teenage kids are in their 60s.
I know how that goes. All of us.
They're all American citizens now. They all became citizens.
And very hardworking, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, these are the people that, unfortunately, it's in today's world, they appreciate being in America more than we do sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a message that I'm sure that you're going to continue delivering to everybody that you talk to. Yeah, I would like to have you back on again to talk about maybe some of the techniques and things that you used while you were working with VA with the patients that were there. I mean, I know it's really hard. It's hard for all veterans, but it seems especially hard for Vietnam veterans to open up. I mean, even now, 50 years later, you know, we have people that are, you know, that come to our meetings and you go, hey, tell us what you did. Well, I don't talk about that.
You know what was the icebreaker going into a patient's room, a veteran's patient's room, is the CIB I was wearing on my suit coat.
I'll bet.
That was the icebreaker. Otherwise, they would have kicked me out because a lot of them just didn't want anything to do with religion.
Well, it wasn't just a religion. I can remember it was just a personal thing. Of the first therapist I talked to was about 12, I thought. And, you know, I had not been in the service. And I walked out of that. I didn't go back for 20 years. So it's unfortunate that happens. Anyhow, we're coming up to the end of the program. I want to thank all three of you for being on Veterans Radio. It's such a pleasure to meet all of you. Father Phil, I really do want to have you back on again at some point in the future. So now that I've got your emails and everything like that, we'll do, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
and the other two guys, Julian and Paul, any books that you wanted me to talk about, let me know. If you're talking about veterans in any way, especially that story about Lily, I thought was really interesting.
Yes.
And we'll get back to you all. So thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We're coming up to the end of the program. Next week is our monthly benefits program. So if you have any questions about benefits, whether it's hospitalization or disability benefits or anything like that, you can, you know, our staff will be on, our experts will be on the air with us. And I want you to make sure that you contact us, send us an email at info@veteransradio.org, or you can call the program, next week when we're on the air. And I'll give out that number next Sunday when we're on the air so that you can do that. A couple of other things also to remember is that the Radio of the River is coming up on September 22nd. We really appreciate anybody that could come out and support that. This is our major fundraiser of the year, and this is where we make up enough money to pay for being on the stations and so forth that we're on. So we're hoping that you will do that. Again, go to veteransradio.org, and there's much more information on there. Let me see, what else? Oh, the Vet Fest coming up next Saturday. Hopefully you'll be there. This is for Southeastern Michigan, at Washtenaw Community College from 10 to 3. We will be there on Veterans Radio. I hope you'll join us there. So the book again today was In the Shadows of Vietnam, The Gallant Life of Father Philip Sawa. Great story, Silver Star, all those things. This guy went through everything that every one of you veterans out there has gone through. So until next week, this is Dale Thornberry for all of us here at Veterans Radio. You are dismissed.